How do they get away with it? How do the fraudsters and schemers keep pulling the wool over our eyes? There's an art to the scam, and Kelly Richmond Pope breaks it down in the new book, Fool Me Once: Scams, Stories, and Secrets from the Trillion-Dollar Fraud Industry. Kelly is a professor of forensic accounting at DePaul University and a recognized expert in white-collar crime. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hello, my name is Kelly Richmond Pope, and I am the author of Fool Me Once: Scams, Stories, and Secrets from the Trillion-Dollar Fraud Industry. I am fascinated by fraud. I know that might sound crazy, but it's true. I was so fascinated by the subject matter that years ago, I started doing on-camera interviews with white-collar felons, whistleblowers, and victims of fraud because I wanted to learn about the crime firsthand. What started out as one interview turned into a lifetime of learning. From these interviews, I've learned five key insights that I'm excited to share with you. Insight number one, under the right circumstances, any of us can commit fraud. Now, this might be a controversial statement, but it is very true. Now, you might be saying to yourself, I would never steal anything, but let's investigate that topic just a little deeper. Do you know someone that plans a family member's birthday or a vacation during work hours? Or better yet, you may use the office copy machine to photocopy those invitations. Harmless, right? But if everyone did it, this could get very expensive for the company. As minor as it seems, this is an example of expense fraud. In the U.S., expense fraud costs companies $1 billion per year. And really, the only way we can stop it is to employ strong prevention and detective strategies to keep organizations safe. Too many of us can rationalize why it's okay to make those copies, or claim some personal expenses as work expenses on our tax returns, or overbill a client to make quarterly sales goals. An example of a person turned offender under the right circumstances is a woman by the name of Rita Cronwell. Rita Cronwell was the former city comptroller of a small Midwestern town called Dixon, Illinois. Now, I know Rita's crimes very well because I directed and produced a documentary called All the Queen's Horses, which chronicles how Cronwell embezzled $53.7 million over a 20-year period from her hometown. Now, before I go into the fraud, let me tell you a little bit about Dixon so that you can put the fraud scheme into context. Dixon is located about 3 hours west of downtown Chicago. It has a population of around 16,000 people. It's the quintessential small town. Tree-lined streets, quaint shops, everyone knows everyone. A place where you think it's fine not to lock your doors at night. People trusted Rita. Why would you not? She was born and bred in Dixon. But little did the Dixon residents know, Rita was stealing their tax dollars and using it on her lavish lifestyle. Oh, I failed to mention that Rita was one of the country's number one quarter horse breeders, winning 52 world championships. But as you can imagine, owning 400 horses can get pretty expensive. But if you have access to money and there are few internal controls, it's easy to be tempted to steal. Donald Cressy, the renowned criminologist, developed something called the fraud triangle. For three components of the fraud triangle are rationalization, opportunity, and pressure. And this framework allows us to break down and understand fraud. In the case of Rita, her opportunity was that she had access to the money, and many of us do. Her pressure was self-induced. She wanted to be one of the number one quarter horse breeders in the world. And as you can suspect, this is a very expensive obsession. And her rationalization? Well, that's the part that continues to intrigue me about this case. Because Rita has never spoken publicly, we can infer her rationalization is, well, I'm going to borrow this money, but I'll put it back later. Well, later never came, resulting in her embezzling $53 million. Remember, fraud happens all the time and by anyone. So if you really want to understand the profile of a white-collar felon, just look in the mirror. Remember, under the right circumstances, any one of us can commit fraud. Insight number two, always pay attention to red flags. Have you ever observed how people behave when a fire alarm goes off? Stop and think about it. This happened to me one day at work, and I stood for just a few seconds observing human behavior in action. One afternoon while in my office, the building fire alarm went off. Now, my office is located in downtown Chicago, so I'm on the sixth floor, so the elevator is the main way you get up and down, except when the fire alarm goes off. When I heard that alarm, immediately, I gathered my things and I started knocking on my colleagues' doors, but no one budged. I knew they were in the office because I'd just seen them moments before, but I knocked and moved on. Why? Because a fire alarm was going off. But what I realized at that moment is the following. We are so conditioned to think that there is no fire, and it's only a false alarm. We're so conditioned to think that we tend to do nothing. We carry on like business as usual, when in fact, we should be doing something and doing something pretty quickly, like getting out of the building. This same behavior of not paying attention to red flags happens when fraud is occurring. Red flags are all around us, and research suggests that we tend to ignore them. There were red flags in the Dixon case. Think about this. A city employee owning 400 horses, an employee taking 4 months off of vacation time, very few internal controls around the person that controlled the finances, the same auditing firm for more than 5 years, very little town engagement. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. My point here is that red flags were waving high in everyone's face, yet no one did much about it. We've become so trusting of our colleagues, that we would never suspect that the people we know, our C-suite executives, could defraud our organization. Take Bernard Madoff, for example. I mean, look at him. He was trusted, admired, revered, and yet he was running a sham the entire time. But even with Madoff, there were red flags. For example, a business Madoff's size would have had a much larger accounting firm handling their operations. Or the fact that it was frowned upon to even ask Madoff a question. No one ever did. Or that Madoff's returns outperformed industry norms in an unexplainable way. These red flags were everywhere, but only a few paid attention. And when the SEC began to listen to the lone whistleblower, unfortunately, it was too late. Insight number 3, all perpetrators are not created equal. Now, I've been doing interviews for over 15 years, and I started to reflect on the emotional roller coaster I've been on while diving into these fraud cases. I started to ask myself, why are some of the offenders I'm angered by where others I can empathize more? And we know there's nothing wrong with having empathy because it's what makes us human, right? It's the clarity I needed around my own empathy that guided me into creating a new fraud archetype framework that builds upon the groundbreaking work started by Donald Cressy. As you may recall, in insight number 1, we talked about the components of the fraud triangle, which are opportunity, pressure, and rationalization. I was curious about the rationalization component and wanted to look at it from every angle, from the perspective of the perpetrator, the prey, and the whistleblower. Let's focus on the perpetrator for the moment. It's important to understand this vital point. Everyone does not steal because of greed. At least that's not everyone's initial intention. And understanding this initial intention is what will allow you to believe that insight number 3, that all perpetrators are not created equal, rings true. Now, if you're like me, you are hooked to all things crime-related on TV. And any good crime series talks about what I like to call an intentional perpetrator. This is a category of offenders that seeks to defraud, but they're not con artists, but rather they're persuasive, narcissistic, risk-taking leaders that are likable and aggressive all at the same time. They often have a ask for forgiveness, not permission type attitude. They believe in achieving results, yet how they get there could be a tad shady. I've interviewed my fair share of intentional perpetrators, and always I've left those meetings feeling confused. I'm often angered by their arrogance and overconfidence displayed in order to execute their scheme. But the thing is, we all display some level of confidence, arrogance, and narcissism. The next two categories, however, pull at the heartstrings just a little bit differently, and they are accidental perpetrators and righteous perpetrators. Let's start with the accidental perp first. The accidental perp is the team player, the people pleaser, the one who follows the boss's orders, sometimes blindly. They've made an unethical decision that positively benefits the organization or the people inside the organization, but rarely for direct personal financial gain. When I've done these interviews, this is where my empathy rises. And empathy allows us to imagine ourselves in someone else's shoes. I often think of my friends who work in senior leadership roles or attendees I've met in my training workshops who have been in the shoes of many of these accidental perps I've interviewed over the years. They are all trying to help their organization. And that could be to help save jobs, improve the balance sheet for a potential acquisition, or just keeping their boss happy. And when they are sentenced, man, I tell you, your heart goes out to them. Why? Because maybe we see ourselves in them. Our last category is the righteous perpetrator. Now, similar to the accidental perpetrator, the righteous perp is not engaging in fraud for direct personal financial gain. Instead, they're using their organizations to help someone outside of their organization. And that person could be a friend, a family member, or even society. You know another person that wanted to help people? Elizabeth Holmes. Yep, I said it. Elizabeth Holmes, the former biotech entrepreneur and now convicted fraudster. And yeah, we can all agree that she lied and she lied badly. But what I want you to think about is why. Instead of having to take vials and vials of blood, wouldn't life be easier for patients if all tests could be run on just a finger prick? Holmes wanted to do good, and in her mind, she was doing good. Now, we know she used her power and her privilege to create a sham, and in the end, we know it all came to a crash, but really, really, she was trying to help. Now, I argue Holmes started out as a true righteous perpetrator, but as time progressed, she entered into the intentional perpetrator category. Now, remember, not all perps are created equal, and understanding their initial intentions could help you set up better internal controls to prevent future problems. Insight number 4, think like a perp and you will never be a prey. If you have ever been victimized, whether you are an individual or an organization, you already know the toll this takes. You spend hours wondering why you and how did this happen? And in some cases, we make it easy to be targeted because we provide all of our personal information on social media. At the individual level, you could be an innocent bystander, not even aware that fraud is lurking around the corner. When innocent bystanders, the term I use for individuals victimized by a perpetrator, when they reach out to me looking for help, it's always hard. It's hard because there's a natural vulnerability embedded in life that we just can't control. From the water we drink, to the cars we drive, to the medicines we take, we have to assume that things are what they say they are. And unfortunately, we can't always verify if something's fraudulent. And this is what makes life scary. Think about why the elderly are so frequently targeted. They tend to have more savings, they can be more generous, and sometimes have less fiscal oversight from an outside family member. They can also become a victim quicker and for higher amounts. Research from the FBI finds that cybercriminals stole $1.8 billion from unsuspecting older Americans in 2020. And you know what the most common scam was? Tech support frauds. Tech support frauds happen when an intentional perpetrator poses as a technician who will resolve an issue such as a compromised bank account or a computer virus and will interact with the innocent bystander, gathering valuable personal information that allows them to engage in identity theft. Intentional perpetrators can also victimize companies, which I refer to as organizational targets. The U.S. government, although not a company, but a large organization, became an organizational target during the pandemic as perpetrators used a variety of schemes from fake vaccines to fraudulent unemployment benefits to steal massive amounts of money. Because it's just so easy to become an innocent bystander or an organizational target is why you must be educated on the types of schemes, the red flags missed, and the rationalizations often used to justify these frauds. Insight number 5, embrace the whistleblower. Unfortunately, we live in a society where people that attempt to come forward with the truth often get attacked. Remember, all perpetrators are not the same, and this also applies to whistleblowers. In my documentary, All the Queen's Horses, the fraud was discovered by a whistleblower named Kathy Swanson. She is what I call an accidental whistleblower, and that is somebody who was doing their job and during their day-to-day operations stumbles upon a discrepancy. Typically, an accidental whistleblower does not identify as a whistleblower because they were just doing their job, and that's what caused them to report what they saw. Oftentimes, the accidental whistleblower is not ostracized by their community for coming forward. Now, compare this to a noble whistleblower who is asked to turn a blind eye or not report wrongdoing if they see it. This brave person courageously steps outside of the group or team to blow the whistle, and when they do this, they are greeted with extreme distrust. Like the accidental whistleblower, they don't naturally identify as a whistleblower and are surprised when they're greeted with rejection. We tend to distrust a person that steps outside of the group, even if they are telling the truth. The last category is the vigilante whistleblower, and I argue this is the category that terms like snitch, rat, tattletale traitor is actually referring to. The vigilante never minds their own business. And when they see an injustice, whether it has anything to do with them or not, they are telling. We need all of these categories of whistleblowers, and they each play a different and important role in society. When we think of the vital information presented by each whistleblower category, I do hope you can see why it's important that we create environments where these courageous individuals feel embraced. From Peter Buxton, who exposed that African-American patients in the Tuskegee syphilis experiment were left untreated, to Cynthia Cooper, who worked to expose the $3.8 billion fraud at WorldCom, whistleblowers should always be celebrated and not just tolerated. As you can see, I am very passionate about fraud, why it happens, and how to stop it. And if you're curious about what type of whistleblower or even perpetrator you would ever be, go over to my website at kellyrichmondpope.com and play this game called the Fool Me Once Interactive Fraud Game. It's fun, it's quick, of course it's free, and it was created for my students, but anyone can play it. It may reveal something about yourself you never even knew. Hey, thank you so much for listening, and I do hope you enjoy the book, Fool Me Once, Scam Stories and Secrets from the $1 trillion Fraud Industry.
Thank you, Kelly. That was Kelly Richmond Pope with five big ideas from Fool Me Once, Scam Stories and Secrets from the $1 trillion Fraud Industry. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.